Can a survey change the future? Maybe this one can. Cannabis education is inconsistent at best and missing or misleading at worst. How can we make cannabis education better? What if we ask people who use or are thinking about using cannabis a bunch of questions? What if we ask pharmacists who could be teaching people about cannabis a bunch of questions? And then, what if the answers from those questions were used to help pharmacists teach people about cannabis better? Well, this is exactly what pharmacists as cannabis educators, or PACE, are doing. And PACE needs you to fill out a survey. PACE needs as many people as possible to fill out a survey. PACE needs you to fill out a survey on or before May 12th. This is a limited time offer for you to help change the future of cannabis education. To participate, go to promo.reefermed.ca. That's promo, P-R-O-M-O dot reefermed.ca.
And then you have to have somebody such as themselves or an caregiver to give it to them, which is ludicrous because the nurses in the facilities, at least in the state of California, cannot gift them the cannabis that they need.
There are so many answers that lie dormant within those plants that we have yet to tap.
Hi, this is Biff Naked, and you're listening to the Reefer Madness podcast.
It's Reefer Madness, the podcast with Trevor and Kirk.
Kirk, we're back.
How's it going?
Good. The beard is looking good and more normal and less Cossack-y, so, you know.
Yeah, it's filling
you're
up.
You're looking more like a regular human from this century. And, yes, but we are here today to talk hemp. And I know you like the hemp. We met Clayton Moore a little while ago, but I thought you'd really like
episode
105.
Episode 105.
Go back and listen to that for a short bit of Clayton, but this is a whole bunch of Clayton and a whole bunch of hemp. You know, everything from hempcrete to trichomes. So, Kirk, tell us a little bit about what you and Clayton talked about.
Well, first of all, let's introduce this young man. He is all of 21 years old. He's into his final senior year at Texas A&M. He is following a family tradition, which he speaks to. He's an undergraduate research student in the Industrial Hemp Breeding Program. He manages Texas A&M's university's first hemp germ plasma bank. He is the president and founder of the student-led initiative called CHILL, Cannabis Hemp Innovative League.
Great acronym, by the way.
It's a great acronym. He's a very interesting man. I swear to you that in the next 5 years, if our podcast is still going, he's definitely going to be going and we'll be contacting him again. This is his cannabis story. And I think he's going to be a mover and shaker in that southwest part of the Americas. Yeah, interesting man.
And certainly got a lot of energy and passion for the plant. So yeah, I agree. I don't see why Clayton shouldn't become a world-renowned expert in some part of hemp. I guess you'll have to, if he goes the PhD route, it'll be whatever that is. Plus, you know, maybe a PhD with a business. So he's definitely
a growing concern.
A growing concern. I like that. It's a good place to let us get introduced into Clayton Moore from Texas A&M.
Howdy. My name is Clay Moore. I'm a student researcher at Texas A&M University, and I help run an organization called the Cannabis Hemp Innovation League, or CHILL for short.
And how long have you been doing that?
So we've been a student organization ever since January 2022. We had our first academic semester this past year, fall 2022 and spring 2022. We had 74 active paid members. They paid their dues to be a part of our student organization. And we had over 600 students in attendance over 14 meetings. We basically are all about research and academia within cannabis and hemp, teaching the students what it's about, how they can get into the industry. We'll invite industry leaders like medical doctors, or we'll invite product developers or growers or chemists for extraction to come speak at our meetings and speak to the students. We're non-major specific. We'll take anyone and absolutely everyone. basically to show you that everyone has a place in this industry, and we're going to do our dang best to show you that you fit right in.
Okay, before we get into Chill, let's focus on you for a bit. You are a senior undergrad?
Yes, sir. I'll be a senior this fall at Texas A&M University. I've been researching hemp for the past 3 years, right after my freshman year down in A&M Kingsville. That's about it. I come from Victoria, Texas, down south, and then I'm a third generation Aggie and eighth generation Texan. So
you've eight generations Texans, man, that goes back a few. So you, Texas A&M, so you are from a farming community? Is, like you say, three generations of Aggies?
Yes, so it skipped my mom. I'm actually an agronomist here at Texas A&M University, and my grandfather was agronomist, and his dad was an agronomist, and his dad. And so it skipped my mom. She actually became a lawyer and then is now a judge in Victoria. So it goes deep.
We'll give her that. So did you grow up on a farm?
No, I did not. I grew up going to the farm in the summers, though. We have a ranch down in Palacios, Texas. But I grew up in Victoria and more of the city area, and then would travel in the summers and go stay with grandma. So,
okay, so you're a pretty young lad. So what got you into hemp? Now, you're going to have to help me out here. So in Texas, it's legal for medicinal cannabis, not recreational cannabis. So how did you get into hemp? What brought you forward? And your mom's a judge, for crying out loud. How'd you get into hemp?
Right. Well, I had a lot of friends that struggled with drug abuse, and some family members that also struggled with drug abuse. And that really turned my ears open to alternative medications that are a lot better than a lot of harder opiates that don't really fix any of your problems and kind of just temporarily do the trick. But for now, because I'm in Texas, I can't just move out of the state and go to a legal market where I'd like to be for medical or recreational. I got to stick with what I got. And so if I can do my best and try to further the hemp industry to the point to where we might have a recreational or medical market, that's exactly what I'm going to do. And so that's kind of what sprung my idea. And I think that I'm exactly where I need to be because it's in my blood.
Well, that's very cool. As a Canadian, Texas is known to be quite a conservative state. So how did Texas A&M, like I know they've got an entire school on hemp, right? So how does that happen?
Yeah, so Texas A&M adopted an industrial hemp breeding program in about 2019, right after the 2018 Farm Bill that legalized hemp on the federal level. And whenever Texas A&M switched the gun, they really are interested in the hemp side of industrial uses such as fiber for textiles, clothing, building materials, and the grain for food production, cattle feed production, et cetera. And there's a lot of laws that you have to work around, say like the grain production for cattle feed. They just approved a couple of new agricultural animals. You can't put it in just everything you want for all of your other agricultural animals. And then the fiber side, actually Texas A&M's material science department and the engineering department just received a grant from the DOE probably last year, around $2.3 million for hempcrete printing, 3D hempcrete printing, which is pretty outstanding. That's a lot going on here in Texas with the hempcrete. So
DOE, that's Department of Education?
Energy.
Energy. Okay. So you define cannabis and hemp the same way as the rest of us do? Is it 0.3% THC?
Yes. So hemp will be defined under the 0.3% THC range. And then, yes, anything over that would be considered medical or marijuana. So.
Now, not without outing you here, but I think I was watching a video with you showing one of the plants you grew. And there was some trichomes on there that, were they indicative of hemp, or was that a cannabis plant?
They're all hemp. Any videos you see? Well, it depends on where you saw this video. I have traveled a lot for our program to do some R&D in the hemp side. But all of the plants that are here on campus have to be hemp because that's only what's legalized in Texas. I'm assuming that it is because we do have a lot of hemp plants that do show a lot of trichome production and a lot of similarities to what you would see in regular cannabis or medical or recreational cannabis. So,
okay.
I want to just stick with the laws for a little bit here because we Canadians, you know, it's nice to talk to somebody from a different jurisdiction. So is there something that individual towns or cities can opt into having recreational cannabis?
So no, that's not how it would work. It would have to work on a state by state basis here in Texas. And if either yes or no, our medical program is pretty interesting, but it's not up to par with any of the other fully legal medical states. Right now, it's only 1% by weight of the product, THC. So people are making these gummies that are about this big and upping the dose of the THC because they can't do by dosing of 10 milligrams or anything like that. Also, the only things that are allowed in Texas for medical cannabis are gummies, lozenges, and tinctures. So no flower for medical right now. And so there's a lot of people that aren't really getting into the medical side, not because they're not interested in how it's ran, but a lot of people don't agree that the current medicine that's available in our medical program really helps anyone because of the amount that is being given to the patients. So,
okay. So let's talk about your organization. It is CHIL, Cannabis Hemp Innovation League. Tell me about that. And you're part of the executive.
Yes, I was one of the founders of the student organization, along with another student named Ian McGrath and another student named Meredith Clay. We basically got together. We're all researchers in the industrial hemp breeding program, and we discussed with our professor about starting a student organization to educate the general public on what we're doing. And he was all for it. He signed on as our advisor, and all three of us got together and we started this Cannabis Hemp Innovation League. And it took all summer for us to create a constitution, make sure that everyone stays happy, we're following the rules. And so basically, we started up in the fall, and in our first meeting, we had over 120 students in attendance, which was quite amazing. We were scared that we were going to fill up the room and there was going to be no seats left. But honestly, that's a great thing because we think that a lot of people should be educated on cannabis. And luckily for us, we're allowed to sign off on some projects where we can count it towards citizen science, where we can actually bring some of our hemp plants to our meetings for the students to actually see visually and be able to like look at the plant, look at the trichomes on the plant. Some of the hemp shows anthocyan production, so you'll see some really pretty purple plants. But basically, we try to hit every area of the cannabis industry possible, anywhere from medical, recreational. You could be a chemist, biology major, engineer, and we try to make sure that you know that you have a place. And basically, we do a lot of other things, like a local Texan who's also an A&M alumni. His name's Taylor Kirk, and he actually is in Giddings, Texas, and allows us to come to his greenhouse for a planting day and then a harvest day for his CBD hemp varieties in his greenhouse. So it gives the students a real hands-on experience to see what it's like to actually work in a greenhouse that no other universities are currently doing right now. And we thank him greatly for that. We also are being recognized by our university that you mentioned. Texas is a very conservative state, and so is Texas A&M, is a very conservative school. And actually, we received a $4,250 scholarship to our student organization for an educational field trip to Colorado to go visit some medical facilities and extraction facilities, and just to go experience what it's like to be in the city life of Colorado. We're planning that actually right now, so we'll be heading that way around the end of September. But we've got a lot of other cool things that we're working on. If we're talking about laws still. We support this coalition that was created not too long ago, called the College Station Decriminalization, or CSTAT Decrim for short. Basically, it's a coalition of student organizations that are working together to decriminalize cannabis in College Station to protect the residents and the students' future careers and passions and endeavors for a small possession charge that could potentially take away opportunities that would never receive if they found out that they had that charge on their past. So we've got a lot of great stuff. So
yeah, I know, it sounds very interesting. So talk to me a little bit about Texas A&M. Now, Trevor down in Florida met you and your team of professors. So is Texas A&M actually got fields of hemp that you guys are growing and checking out?
Yes, currently we have three plots out at the farm right now, right next to the corn, the cotton, the sorghum, you name it. We've got it out there. We're doing different projects right now. Trevor got to meet my boss, Dr. Russell Jessup, who runs the industrial hemp breeding program, and he also got to meet Dr. David Baltensberger, who is our department head of the Agricultural Soil and Crop Science Department. And then he also got to meet me, and I'm just a student researcher in his program. But to talk a little bit about the science that's going on behind it, we have four graduate students and four undergraduate students in our program right now. It only started off with me and another graduate student at the very beginning of fall 2021. But basically, now that we're up there, we have a graduate student that is working on inbred lines. So if you ever look at a row of cotton or corn, you know, it's genetically uniform. It grows straight across. You know, if you plant out hemp or cannabis by seed, you're going to get a bunch of variation in size and yield and everything. Well, with inbred lines, we're working on trying to create a uniform hemp crop for both grain, fiber, and multi-use crops. So if you're interested in doing just fiber for materials and textiles and building materials, you can select that variety. If you're interested in just doing grain for cattle feed production or grain oil extraction, you can pick that, or the multi-use, you can do both. And so we've got that going on. We've also got another graduate student who's working on tetraploids and triploids. So basically, you and I, we have two sets of chromosomes. We're diploids, and regular cannabis plants and hemp plants are diploids. Well, if you double the chromosomes of a regular plant and you cross, if you double the chromosomes of a diploid, you get a tetraploid. And if you breed a diploid and a tetraploid together, you can get a triploid, meaning sterile hemp. Just like ligers and mules, they won't produce seed. So you can have a seedless crop if we can create these triploids and make sure that it stays uniform. Then we have another student that's doing fiber research. He's making biocomposites, plastics, and other building materials. And then we have another student who's working on heat and drought tolerance genes and hemp, because as you know, Texas gets very, very hot. Right now it's 104 degrees outside as we speak, very, very hot. And then we have four other undergraduates. I run this program called the Hemp Conversion Program, where I reach out to breeders, growers all around the world within a 30 degrees north latitude and a 30 degrees south latitude to find southern coastal adapted hemp to make crosses and increase germplasm here in America. It was granted a $200,000 grant from USDA ARS to increase hemp germplasm in the United States of America. There's a list that was approved of over 100 different varieties from the USDA, and really only 8 to 12 of them are commercially available that farmers actually know how to source them. And everyone seems to be growing a lot of the same strains, and there's not any new development going on that's hitting the mass scale. So this project is basically to increase the germplasm and diversify what farmers can choose to grow on their own fields. And then we'll move on to Ian McGrath, who's working on organic terpene-based pesticide. So we're extracting terpenes directly from cannabis and hemp and taking the pure isolates and forming an organic pesticide. So, you know, Roundup has a lot of different chemicals in it, like glyphosate that can be carcinogens. And basically, he's making an all-organic terpene-based pesticide that is just terpenes and some other oils. I can't go in depth on what those are because that's IP currently, but we're using that as a better alternative than what's currently on the market. And then we have Meredith Clay, who's doing a lot of trichome research and a lot of propagation methods like cloning and petiole cloning and other sorts of things. They're trying to basically develop an app that can look at a trichome and tell you exactly what stage your plant is at. Basically the app will be on your phone, and there's a little microscope attachment. You put it right up to your plant, and it'll take a landscape image of that leaf material with the trichomes on it, and it'll tell you at what percent you're at amber, what percent you're at cloudy, and what percent you're at clear. Basically, if you're not familiar, the trichomes have three different stages, and clear means no cannabinoids, cloudy means cannabinoids, and amber means deteriorating cannabinoids. So it lets you know your percent yield of amber trichomes to help you with your harvest. And then we have Chris. We have a new student who's doing a lot of new research that's not out for public talk yet. But other than that, that's kind of what our program is doing currently. And we have a lot of plants out in the field. So,
wow, that's amazing. So now you did say cannabis and hemp. So you're growing cannabis, like marijuana and hemp, or are you categorizing just hemp?
Sorry, just hemp. Just categorizing just hemp under the 0.3%. Sorry for the confusion. Okay.
No worries. Okay, so that's a lot of hemp. So is Texas A&M growing all your own crops for this research?
Yes, we're growing all of our crops. We're not really, I don't think we're allowed to third party do any research with other facilities. We are allowed to help other facilities that do want to do their own R&D to give them like some word of what we found in our own program and things, but we're not allowed to do any outside hemp research with other third parties yet. We're lucky enough, us and another university was awarded a research facilities license, which is a little different than a regular hemp growers license, hemp producers license. Basically, we are allowed to do the breeding. We're allowed to do all of this extra research with our hemp crops. Unlike hemp producers, they have to just grow the product, create a product, sell the product. But with us, we actually can do a lot more R&D than other people can. So we're getting a load of work put on our plates because
no kidding. So how big are your fields?
Our fields are usually they stay under an acre per project. We don't go over an acre on our projects just because we're doing mass selections of different diverse genetics. So one plot will have probably like 40 different varieties in that one plot. It's not like we're growing out fields and fields of just one variety just yet, because we're in the development stage of selecting of varieties that are going to be good in Texas or southern coastal plains, basically. So one
acre will have several experiments going on in 1 acre.
Usually it's one plot will indicate one research project,
and that's an acre.
Yeah, basically. We'll stay under the acre, that one project, and then we'll go find somewhere else to do another project. And we like to space it out. Just because you might be growing a feminized line, but your feminized line could also hermaphrodite, and you can have male pollen sacs pop up, and you really don't want to mix this project over here that is going to be a feminized only trial, and you're going to have a trial over here that's going to be a regular trial where you're going to have males and females pop up, and you don't want any cross-pollination going on. So
right. No, that would be important. So I would imagine all the stuff's harvested by hand?
Yes. Currently, we don't have any farm equipment or any machines that will come through and chop off. We've talked with a couple other universities that do have some really, really cool machinery that can come in and say you're growing for a fiber type or a dual use. Basically, if you're growing for a dual use, it's usually the bush on top that has all of your grain and seed, and then under will be about like 3 to 4 feet of hemp fiber, just the stalk. And so they have these machines that can come through and cut off the top. They'll harvest all the grain, and then they'll come back around again and cut the bottoms and harvest all the fiber. And so there's some really cool stuff going on like that. But really, yes, it's we harvest and then we thresh with our own hands, get all sticky from the trichomes that are on them and the resin, things like that. So,
wow, that's really cool. So I guess as a citizen of Texas, if I'm traveling down the highway and I look across, does it say hemp? Like how do you keep people away from your hemp crop?
So I'm not sure if I'm allowed to talk about location, but we only have one research field, but we like to keep it protected by not putting it right next to the street so that okay. people no, that are driving on the highway don't just drive in and
that
see
makes sense.
It. But yeah.
I live in Dauphin. We live in a hemp producing area. We've been producing hemp in Dauphin for about 25 years. So you can travel down the highway and there'll be a big field of hemp. But everybody around here realizes that, you know, go ahead and smoke that if you want to. You're just going to get yourself a headache. So it's all for grains. It's all for grains and a little bit for fiber.
Exactly. And there's a couple of places in Texas where people will have hemp varieties that are being grown on their property that are close to highways and roads and things like that. But A&M specifically, we hide it all because, like you had said, it's if someone came in and stole it, yeah, go ahead and smoke it. It's not gonna do what you think it's gonna do. But really, that's affecting our research and whatever project we're doing. So it's a lot bigger than just bigger than someone stealing it just to get high or something like that. You're affecting like a project that was heavily funded. So we like to make sure our fields are a little more secure than being right up next to the roads. But a lot of other people who are just growing for fiber and grain types can be right up next to the road. I think I've driven through Matagorda, which is kind of around where our ranch is, and there's some fields out there that have hemp in them that you can see directly from the road. So
as a farmer of hemp, and you've been doing it now for about 2.5 years?
3 years, yeah.
3 years. So what is your biggest learning? I'm not talking about the science, I'm not talking about the CBDs, but farming hemp. What's your biggest learning about farming hemp so far?
Do your due diligence before you just jump in. A lot of, I'm glad that I got to start with the university and not just start on my own, because a lot of farmers started on their own whenever federal legalization came around and Texas was okay with it. And they jumped right into it. They said, oh man, I'm going to grow this crop and I'm going to make tons and tons and tons of money, because they were in the mindset that what they were growing was the same thing as recreational or medical cannabis versus hemp, which is going to be under your psychoactive level, 0.3% THC. And so they were like, oh, I'm going to grow all this and this is going to sell like crazy. Well, what had happened was there was farmers that started growing their hemp and they ended up having hemp stored away, rotten away, getting mold in their barns for over 3 years and had no one to send it to. So really, really do your due diligence before you do anything. You know, find a buyer, get a contract, do all this other stuff. I know that hemp is not as easy as any other agricultural crop to get into, not only because of the laws and regulations and the supply chain of getting the product to the customer, but also the plant itself is really finicky. You can't really spray much on it without killing it. You can't really do the same agricultural practices as you can with other crops on it. It's a whole new playing field, basically. And Texas is learning just as much as we can. But there's been other states and countries like Canada that have been further ahead of us in this game. So we're playing catch up right now. So
my understanding of harvesting hemp is that you need specialized equipment. One of the biggest problems that when the American farmer decided to plant acres and acres of hemp was that they didn't know how to cut it down, because they just basically, their equipment wasn't appropriate. And then once they cut it down, it just started composting in the fields.
Yeah, right. It's a real hardy plant. It's not like you have 8 acres of hemp that you just planted. You're not going to go with a bunch of scissors and just go chop it all for 8 acres. You need the right equipment, but some equipment, like we've even noticed, say we were tilling a field or something like that with a push tiller or something, we've clogged up our tiller before with like hemp fibers, and it's like stopped. It's actually stopped our tiller before. And so like you need some pretty good equipment that what Texas just doesn't have right now currently. There's a couple of other states that have created some equipment that are really great for it that Texas has been renting out or borrowing and things like that. But yeah, like you said, the technology needs to be there to be able to harvest acres and acres and acres of hemp, which I don't think it's at yet. So
I find it very cool. You guys are really focusing on genetics around your region. So the genetics that were growing up in Canada wouldn't be relevant to your research.
No, your stuff would just... You know,
sure, fair enough.
Yeah, we're so basically my professor, before he got into hemp research, he was a perennial grass breeder. And so there's a gene that they call stay green in grasses. And basically it can go, you know, weeks without water and it'll just stay green forever. And so basically what we're trying to do is breed in hemp that stay green gene so that it'll just it won't have to absorb as much water. It won't need as much water as it usually does. And that it'll just stay green for as long as it can, because Texas, we go through severe drought, without rain, for, you know, it could be all summer. I remember last summer, it was just awful with the rain. We didn't have any rain whatsoever, and we had to irrigate all of our plots, every other day, basically, it seemed. But that's one of the things we're looking for, is that heat and drought tolerance. So not only the heat from outside, but that drought and stay green gene. So
how do you find the soil? Like, does cannabis need special soil? Once you've harvested the cannabis, have you tested the soil? Does it improve the soil?
So nothing too interesting on the improving the soil part. It doesn't have legumes, so it's not really nitrogen fixing or anything like that. But I have read some studies that tilling your hemp waste back into the soil can be good for nitrogen fixation in some sort of way as well. But one thing we've noticed is that right here where we're at in College Station is very heavy clay pan, and the hemp does not particularly like that heavy clay pan. Hemp likes more permeable, like sandy silt soils versus heavy clay soils. So all of the plants that we grow in our facility and in our greenhouses on campus, we usually use a really permeable sandy coco coir mix of some sorts. And then the further south you go in Texas towards the coast, you'll get more sandier soils. Like where my farm is, it's very sandy. It's very sandy, and hemp thrives there, basically in the Matagorda area of Texas. But where we're at currently with the soil, it's having a hard time just breaking the surface with that heavy clay. So
so where are you going to be, I don't know, let's say 6-10 years from now? You're a young man now, so you're going to be in your 30s 10 years from now. What are you going to be doing with this?
So I have a couple of wants. So this fall, actually, December, I have to submit an application to Molecular Environmental Plant Sciences that I'm applying for my PhD here at Texas A&M so that I can continue my cannabis research. And hopefully one of these days I want to own my own business and potentially grow in the recreational or medical markets, that is, as a director of cultivation or a director of operations, because growing isn't the only thing that excites me. I get excited about extraction procedures as well, of terpenes or cannabinoids or anything of that sort. So really owning my own business would be a really big thing, especially in Texas, if Texas legalizes recreational and medical, which I believe they will. It's only a matter of time before all of the United States legalizes, in my opinion. But whenever they do, that's where I will be, right here in Texas, hopefully having my own business. So
that's very cool, man. I got a few more minutes with you. Is there a question I didn't ask? Is there something you wanted to, other information you want to share?
I am a scientific writer for a published magazine here in Texas called the Texas Hemp Reporter. And that's ran by Russell Dowden. And he's got a really cool podcast as well, the Texas Hemp Reporter. And he basically helps all of these businesses that are starting up here in Texas, and businesses that are already doing really well. They like to buy advertisement space on Wellness Magazine. I get to write really cool articles for those people and also just give updates on what we've learned at Texas A&M. So people who have a subscription to that magazine can flip through and see, oh my goodness, this is what A&M is doing. Oh my goodness, this is what Chill's doing. This is what's happening in Texas. There's these products. There's these hemp fibers that you can buy for this clothing line, you know, things of those sorts. So that's another thing that I do. And the Cannabis Hemp Innovation League gave away over $5,000 in scholarships to our students so that we're proving to you that it's not just some, you know, club for just students who want to have, you know, a good time learning about cannabis or hemp. It's really like an academic standard that we're setting in this cannabis industry. And basically, we had two scholarships this past semester that we gave away, one from Pure ISO Labs here in Texas, based out of Burney, Texas. And it was for $1,000 to create your own product based out of a CBD or a fiber line of some sorts or a grain type. And then we also created a Texas Hemp Scholarship that any university in Texas can apply for. It's $2,000, and it's how can we destigmatize, here I'll read the topic. It is how to destigmatize cannabis in the eyes of academia, professionals, industry professionals, and the general public. And basically we had a student win that and his article got posted in this magazine, and we're being sought after for helping with that destigmatization of cannabis in Texas. So,
oh, that's very cool, man. It sounds like we'll be talking to you in a few more years as you get yourself situated in the industry. I wish you luck, and I thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Kirk.
Kirk, I really like Clayton when I met him in person. He really is an enthusiastic young man, obviously an intelligent young man, but and this was the cool part about you having the longer interview, you know, people in his sphere doing everything, see if I can get some of these right, everything from a coalition to decriminalize cannabis on campus. So, you know, if you had a charge for a small possession, you know, that not to ruin the rest of your life, to, you know, some of his research associates doing stuff that I'll pretend I understand, mixing diploid and diploid to get a tetraploid, and then a diploid and a tetraploid to get a triploid. Anyway, to basically get a sterile mule-like cannabis plant without seeds, heat and drought resistance, one that I really thought was cool, terpene-based organic pesticides, which sounded like it was a little bit under hush-hush exactly what they were doing, but, oh, and 3D printing hempcrete. There was a lot going on in that interview.
Yeah, there is. There is a lot going on. I was thinking about that early meme in the cannabis sphere of the internet. There's a picture of the hemp plant in the middle and all the sort of spokes from a tire going out what you can do with hemp. It's almost as if the University of Texas A&M, if they just took that meme, put it up on the wall and said, which student wants fiber? Which student wants this one? It's because it was like going through a tick box. And I actually, in my notes, I have a tick box. Oh, they're doing that with hemp. Tick. They're doing that with hemp. Tick. What I found most interesting is that we're no strangers to hemp. There are several hemp-related episodes within our library. And many of the things they're doing down in that university, we have a fellow down the street here at Hemp Sense that we interviewed that he's doing a lot of this stuff. But what triggered me was that Clayton's working on a breed, a germ from that area of the world that will grow. So it's almost like he's going to create his own land race of plants that do well in the Texas environment. I find that fascinating. So he's, I guess they're getting into manipulating the plant so it grows in their area and then they can do with what they want. It's sort of kind of like big business in hemp, right?
Yeah. Well, and it makes sense. This is what plant breeders have done, like you said, you know, the sorghum, the corn, the wheat, you know, this is what you do, is you get a variety that grows well in your area and produces what you want. You know, you want a wheat plant that is relatively short but has a whole bunch of seeds in the seed head, because I always get that wrong, whether that's a seed or a grain, but I think it's still seed, and I'm sorry farmers when I keep saying it wrong, but yeah, you this is what plant breeders do, and this is what Texas A&M has been doing forever. So it is very cool that they're sort of turning their expertise onto hemp.
Yeah, I really enjoyed talking to this young man. He's definitely going to be a going concern. I'm excited for him. I hope you know, it's almost like we should just do a yearly update on what he's doing. Because really, he's a busy fella.
he is. And like I said, he's fun to talk to, lots of energy.
Yeah. Well, so I'm Kirk Nyquist. I'm the registered nurse. And
Trevor Schufeld, I'm the pharmacist.
Yeah, Reefer Madness, the podcast. If you listen to, this is really disorganized. If you're listening to our podcast, go to reefermed.ca, check out our website. All the research that we have on our guests is all there. And rate us on that platform you're listening to us on. If you're listening to iTunes, rate us on iTunes or Spotify. Give us a rating. Tell a friend. Oh, I know what I was going to tell you.
Tell me something.
Instagram told us that we won't be shared by them. Our content.
What does that mean?
Meaning that they won't have us arbitrarily come up on Reels. So all those videos I'm doing are not going to be passed on Reels. They don't like our content. And when I posted that, other people in our sphere have had the same problem. So I think what we need to do is that people need to share our posts so their friends can find us. That's my point. We're truly, you know, tell two friends and they'll tell two friends. Go to our YouTube page and you can see the things that Instagram's not sharing. Jeez. Bad Instagram.
Bad Instagram. Bad Instagram. Okay. Well, Kirk, it was another good one. We will catch up with everybody later.
Yeah. Bye now.
Thanks, guys. Well, that was another good one. Of course, we end the show with a couple of things that we normally do. One is we like to always mention that Reefer Madness, the podcast, acknowledges that we produce our shows on Treaty 2 territory in the homeland of the Métis. And, of course, we pay our respects to the First Nations and Métis ancestors of this land as we reaffirm our relationships. And we also play a request. And Clayton had a request, so we're going to play that. And that request is the Aggie War Hymn. That's what we're going to do. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Now, what the hell is Renee going to do with that?